Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Latino Vote Podcast. It's election time. Votes happening. Mike Madrid, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm laughing because I thought I was hopped up this morning. I got in late from the East Coast. I was in Miami. I was visiting with those other Latinos, the Cubans, doing a little project down there, a little top secret project. I'll bring everybody in on it a little bit, but I get in late and I wake up a little bit grouchy, and I'm like, you know what? It's just Chuck and I on the podcast. It hasn't been the two of us in a long time. I'm looking forward to this conversation, and then I find Chuck's even more grouchy than I am in the morning, which is great because Chuck's in the middle of some serious campaign stuff. My cycle hasn't started up as much as he has. We got Super Tuesday here in California coming up. We're one of those Super Tuesday states, but it's not nearly as involved and as engaged as Chuck is. So look, we've had some great guests this year so far. It's going to be just he and I catching up on a lot of things because, folks, there's been so much news to talk about. We're talking here on Wednesday, the day after the Michigan primary. We're going to talk a little bit about that, if that's okay, Chuck. I want to go through some of the results, what you're seeing, what I'm seeing, what everybody's seeing, because I think there were a lot of there's a lot of bad analysis out there. I'm sure there's some good stuff in there, too. But I also want to know kind of what's on your mind, because I got some stuff I want to rant about a little bit, too. But if you're all right, can we dig into this Michigan stuff a little bit?
Yeah, we can talk about Michigan. We probably should. I was looking up, and for people who are watching us on the YouTubes, I was looking up at my calendar on the wall, and I think this will be the last podcast that we have before Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
Or is there a Tuesday in between?
Next one. This is it, man. Tuesday, this next
So let's
Tuesday.
Do Michigan. Yeah, I like how we do the agenda right here live on air. We're going to do it Michigan, and then we'll do Super Tuesday, and then we'll talk about how good looking I am and how city council races are literally hand-to-hand combat. You go.
Yeah, let me. So look, there's been a lot of hand-wringing been made about this uncommitted line in Michigan. Let's talk about the Democrats for a little bit first, if we could. I have been saying, and I continue to believe from what I am seeing, that Joe Biden does not have a problem with his base that is not imminently fixable. Okay. That doesn't mean that it's not going to be, bumpy. Campaigns are bumpy. It's a bumpy business. The weaknesses that he's been showing, with kind of voters of color and younger folks, but actual election day results have showed him commanding like Assad level, numbers over 90%. Numbers like you can't mathematically usually procure, which shows that there's really not much trouble in the base. His Dean Phillips campaign has not gotten any traction. He's losing to Marion Williamson, who dropped out a month ago, but has now, as of this morning, re-engaged her campaign. She said, I'm back into this because when she's not running, she's beating Dean Phillips. So yeah, that's right. Give me a look like that. She's back in this thing, right? So, and it's all silliness because these guys are pulling combined like 2-3% of the vote nationally, okay? Now, there was this big kerfuffle about the Arab American vote, upset about the president's handling of the situation in Gaza. Understand that. But let me say this. One of Mike Madrid's rule number 528,623 of politics is, if you're going to make a political threat, it's got to be a credible threat. You better deliver on it. And I don't care what the threat is, whether it's I'm going to kill that bill in committee, or I'm going to raise you $50,000 for your campaign, or we're going to overperform in this precinct and make sure that you get elected, whatever your threat is, you better deliver. And if you're a sitting congresswoman coming at the sitting president of the United States in your own party, and you tell him that you're going to, show how strong the Arab American vote is in Detroit, and we're going to threaten your capacity to be reelected because of this position on foreign policy, and you're not going to take us for granted anymore, you damn well better be able to demonstrate and pull off those numbers. And I can't say how embarrassing the actual results were for, help me with the congresswoman's name.
Tlaib.
Tlaib.
Rashida Tlaib.
Rashida Tlaib. I'm sorry. I don't pay too much attention to Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. Probably
she's got a safe district. Like, it's just a primary. It's like most of the, nobody can name safe members of Congress because me and you don't spend any time trying to get them elected, even though she is getting some prom. Anyway, you go ahead.
Yeah. And my point is, if you're going to threaten somebody in your own, you know, somebody who's looking to consolidate his base, like right now is the time when you lean into your allies. Nobody's happy 100% of the time with what the president or the leader of your party does. The reason you are a party, a functional, healthy, active party, is because you lean in and you say, it's a democracy. I don't get all of what I want, but I'm getting 80% of what I want. This is good for the community. The other guy is trying to, you know, ban us from being in this country. You better, if you're going to take that kind of a, throw that kind of a haymaker, you better land it square on his jaw. And I'm talking.
Wait. I'm a little confused. I need to make sure.
Yeah.
Do you think that they delivered on what they said or they didn't?
They fell very, very far short of what they needed to send a message.
You should you should tell the viewers, because I know you're amped up and look at me, be at the voice of reason.
Yeah.
What did they say they would do? And then what did they do for those who aren't following Michigan primary last night?
Sorry, God. We have to back up here a little bit too. Sorry, Mike Madrid's just coming unglued right now. I'm just a little bit cranky. The Arab American voter, which is a wide swath of voters in Michigan, especially
there was a movement for them to be uncommitted. The point I want to ask you to make, Mike, is they said that they were going to try to get 10% or more. They were going to get
10,000 raw votes is what they said, which is ridiculous. What they were trying to do is flex and say, we have the strength to prevent Joe Biden from winning Michigan unless you kneel to our demands on how you handle your Mideast foreign policy. That's what this is about.
But they got 100,000 votes, didn't they?
I don't know how many votes. You can get a million votes, but if you're only getting 13-14%, look like a damn fool.
But one of the things I was thinking about, and I want to ask your opinion, is that from what I understand of what the flex was trying to do, is that, and I think they make a good case, and I'll say that as well, is that Michigan, for all of you girls and boys at home, is a state in the general election that is super duper close.
Yes.
And a few votes that leave Joe Biden and stay home or skip that line item could have a big effect. What we don't know is if there's more votes that were uncommitted yesterday than the difference in what they were trying to say is the difference in how many votes it takes to win that on the margins of what it was last time. But we don't know what it's going to be this time. It's a whole different election. There's Donald Trump. There's all these people. But I think they did flex some. I don't think they flexed near what they thought they could flex. But I think that in a race that's so tight as a Democrat here, I worry about every little vote. And if there's a bunch of Muslim Americans that are pissed off in Michigan and there's enough to make a difference, I think it could cost Joe Biden the election.
Well, and this is the difference between Democrats and Republicans.
Here we go.
Is we don't, Republicans fall in line, man. this shit's too important. Don't get me started on Latino too, because I'm going to talk about this immigration stuff. The way everyone's flexing to try to get all of what they want. And it's like the Democratic Party is a coalition party. Okay. By definition, it's less ideological. It's a coalition party. And if you're going to act like a coalition, then you need to be in coalition. One, two, the threat to the country is freaking real, man. He's talking about banning Muslims. Muslims. Like, this isn't about foreign policy, it's about domestic policy. So I get there's anger, I get there's angst, I get it, man. But look at what's going on here. This is not the time to be nipping at the heels of your own guy. Like, now is not that moment.
What I'm hearing is you're saying is, cool, you want to go out and do this thing where you're trying to flex and tell Joe Biden he needs to get in line, but have you not noticed the crazy man on the other side of the aisle who literally don't want you in this country? That's your point?
Yeah, that's my point. I'm sorry, I'm having a rough day today, but I guess I'm just not that clear. But let me also say this. Maybe it's because I'm just a pissed off Republican who's compromised 85% of what I believe to support Joe Biden, and you're pissed about one thing? Y'all pissed off about one thing, but you're getting 90% of what you want? It's like the threat scenario is so high that now is not the time to be asking people in your neighborhood to go vote uncommitted against Donald Jennifer Trump. Like, that's just crazy. Like, you don't do that. And if you do that, you better be able to bring the guy to his knees. And they fell extremely short of that goal. Let me talk to you because you're a little bit more lucid, I guess, than I am. I'm going to have a little bit more coffee.
I'm still drinking water. But I have been up since 4 a.m. because we all know I get up really early. And with the hand-to-hand combat I'm going through in the city council race, I get up and try not to kill anybody before 7 a.m. So I go work out and try to clear my mind, not think about a city council race. But the thing that I do think that they got the attention of last night is that I don't think anybody in the Biden camp is now not worried about doing everything they can do in Michigan. Right, wrong, or indifferent. Was there a flex? Was there not a flex? I know because I've already seen that they're sending policy people to Dearborn to meet with that mayor. Y'all should all know that the mayor of Dearborn is probably one of the highest ranking Arab Americans in the whole country. So many folks that live there are Muslim. That's where Rashida Tlaib actually is from, and she's part of the congressional districts there. And they know what I just said, which is math. And the math is it's going to be an extremely close election. And if folks up there are trying to think they're going to stay home, even though that there's a horrible person on the other side of the aisle, I'm not saying for or against, they better have a damn good state operation from the Biden campaign. It'd probably be really smart if it was led by a Muslim leader. I'm just going to say that too. No, or a black leader.
Yeah.
Because Detroit is a very underperforming city as well and has been decimated. Like, there's lots of trouble in Michigan. And I think that there will be the best thing to do if you want to make money for the rest of your life is go buy a TV station in Michigan this week, because you're going to make a lot of money between now and November in TV commercial revenue.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's helpful. Broadly, how do you think the Biden campaign is doing? Is this a unique problem that he's facing in Michigan, or do you think this leakage, this weakness in the base is fixable, or is it going to be an ongoing problem?
I think that, look, we're Democrats, we're hand wringers, we're bedwetters. All those things are true. And when you say we're a party of coalition, yeah, we're a party of a lot of people who think they're really smart and know every gosh damn thing, right? That's why on the last podcast, y'all heard me talk about being an outsider there. They're going to worry from now till the end. Are they doing what they have to do? Every election cycle is so different. Like, it's kind of like, Mike, there's two incumbents running against each other. We've never really seen that.
Right.
We've obviously never seen a Donald Trump. We've obviously never seen the effect he's going to have on the black vote, or for God's sakes, the Latino vote. Mm-hmm. Like, there's going to be a Trump effect that I tell everybody, good or bad, it could motivate lots of Latinos to show up, less black people. Like, there's just going to be, I think, a Trump effect that we don't see with other candidates, because other people, and Mike Madrid has said this, I give him credit, other people have tried to be Donald Trump. But they're just not. They don't get the performance that he gets as Donald Trump, with the raw numbers of Latinos sliding this way, shaving off of percentages in big cities of black voters, especially men. Other candidates who try to act like Donald Trump, let's use Carrie Lake. They just don't move to people like Carrie Lake. But right. They will do this for Donald Trump. And I do believe Donald Trump will bring new people who've never voted in any election out, especially young people. And it makes me crazy to say that. So I say that big Chuck Rocha wind up to say, I don't really know. I don't know what effect these two incumbents have. I think the Republican Party and Fox News and News Nation have done an extremely good job at making him be this old, fragile, senile old man. And he is old, but I'm old. He's gotten a lot of good shit done that he gets no credit for, because he can't get past the old thing, because they've done such a good job of hanging that around his neck. And then he stutters some, and he shuffles around when he walks like any old man does, but he's fine. You compare him against the crazy man who's not only old as him, but wanting to start a third world war or any other crazy thing, Mike. That's the part where I don't feel comfortable today. I just don't feel comfortable. So I think that Biden will spend as much money as they do. I think they'll have a great campaign. They just named a Latina to be their political director. Like, they know what they got to do. And I think they'll do it. But it still may not be enough, just because it's crazy as fucking Donald Trump. Excuse my language. Mm-hmm.
Well, and so let's talk a little bit more about that, because I mean, I've harangued a little bit about my frustrations with the Democrats as I'm kind of watching from the outside going, y'all are pissed about, you know, not getting 100% on what you want. Try being a Republican supporting Joe Biden when you give it up 90% and you're watching these people pissed off about this shit. And it's like, come on, you know, back off a little bit. Let me talk about Trump, though. Trump has consistently been underperforming in the polls and the polling averages. And I have written and been, you know, pontificating the way Mike Madrid does about the weakness that Donald Trump is demonstrating in his base. I want to explore that a little bit because I think it is pertinent. One big caveat. I think you're exactly right, Chuck. This is going to be a close race, like real close, like close like last time. And that you're always nervous. Anything can happen. And it's going to come down to less than 100,000 votes across a handful of states. We know that. As we get closer, we'll talk about those states. But 4 years ago at this time, when I was with the Lincoln Project doing all the analytic work and all the data work, I was seeing about a 6% shift of Republican college-educated voters leaving Trump and saying, I'm not going to vote for this guy. That number is now three times that figure.
We're seeing it again. Say that again.
4 years ago, when I was doing the data and analytic work, and we were looking at the Republican base. Remember, mm-hmm. 4 years ago, this time, Donald Trump was undergoing the first impeachment hearing.
Okay,
it was the perfect time for Republicans to be saying, I'm done with this fool.
Right.
Got his voice on tape, recorded, blackmailing Zelensky. Right? That's what he was impeached for, by the way. Let's remember that. Okay? His voice is there. Like, the evidence is there. 6%, only 6% of Republicans voters. And all the data we can find, about 4 to 7% range, I'm saying 6% of Republican voters saying, I'm not voting for Donald Trump. I'm out. Checked out. Everybody else rallied behind him. Fast forward 4 years, we're sitting at a factor of three times that, 3x that. Okay. That's mm-hmm. significant. Now, am I Pollyannish enough to believe that they're all, you know, he's going to lose 20%, 18% of the Republican base vote? No, that's not going to happen. But I'd much rather be running against Donald Trump now than I was 4 years ago when we beat him. Because that, to me, is the most critical share of the electorate, because you got this two-vote swing. You pull a Republican off of Trump and you move him to Biden. Trump doesn't just lose a vote. Biden adds a vote on his column. Okay? That's the difference between adding a new low-propensity Democrat or an independent voter or a new voter. What hits to the bone is when you lose your own base and it defects to somebody else. And the GOP base is a smaller base to begin with. So when they're losing those votes, is Nikki Haley just hammering the shit out of them. It hurts. That's why they're so pissed off. Right? That's why they're so angsty.
And you don't think those people come back? You don't, they vote against Nikki, they vote for Nikki Haley because they think she'd be a better president. But when you put Donald Trump against Biden, you don't think those people vote for Trump?
No, I think most of them do.
Okay. But you think it's enough of the other side of that is a little bigger than 4%. It may be 8 or 10.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
That makes sense.
So look, you know, Trump lost about 8% of the Republican base vote last year, and he lost small election. He got 92% of the GOP vote. If Biden gets, you know, 10% of the Republican base vote, Trump's lost. He's done. And to get to you know, 10, 11, 12% of GOP vote, he's already looking right now. He's already polling in the 16, 17, 18, 19% range. That's most of Nikki Haley's vote is anti-Trump vote. It's not pro-Haley. That's what you really got to understand when you're looking
right at
it. That is the only data point that I'm looking at. I'm not looking at the uncommitted voters in the Democratic Party or the turnout numbers in South Carolina. Sure, they're interesting. They tell us something. The only number Mike Madrid is looking at is how many GOP defections are there? Because he is in a weaker position now than Donald Trump is in a weaker position now than he has been since 2016. And if people were exploiting it, Haley and her allies, the chances of a Republican who votes for Nikki Haley in the primary going back to vote for Donald Trump is exponentially less likely to go back to Trump. They should be trying to peel off as many Republican voters as possible in order to beat Trump in November.
Do you think that they know this because they're running more, quote unquote, of a more professional operation over at the Trump office, right? You don't have a bunch of crazy folks over there who used to play video games running a presidential campaign. So, I agree they probably have more quote-unquote professionals over there, and they probably have the same polling and see the same numbers that you do. They expect to get 70, 80% of that Nikki Haley vote back, but there's a larger, probably growing percentage of people who won't vote for him. They may not vote for Joe Biden, which is like a vote for Joe Biden. I get your point, and I agree. But it also makes me think about, is this why they're trying to do things to make up for what they know is already being lost? And when Mike Madrid talks about the base Republican vote, he's talking about a lot of white people, a lot of white, non-college educated white people, I assume. And so this is why you start seeing him with gold sneakers. You start seeing him do more Latino stuff because they need to find a place to make up for the loss of that, right?
That's 100% correct.
Right.
That's what they're doing in the Republican way because they believe that. It's like, oh, we need to get the African-American vote. Let's put out some gold sneakers. I believe that.
Yeah.
Right. And so they're going to try to make up for the loss. You're exactly right. They're going to try to make up for the loss of the suburban white college educated woman votes, which they've been hemorrhaging.
Two more, 3 more percent black vote, 2, 3, 5, whatever the Latino swing vote. Is. Right.
Exactly. Now, they're going to do that. And they're also going to try to stop the bleeding of those white women voters by scaring them with Brown Ben at the border. That's what the border crisis is all about. It's about stopping white women from leaving for Dobbs on abortion by saying these rapists and drug dealers and murderers are coming across the border. I guarantee you this. We're already starting to see it. You're going to start seeing anecdotes and evidence of undocumented immigrants in this country being arrested for violent crimes, rapes, murders on the daily. Now, you're going to start seeing that regularly, okay? Because Fox News has somebody in every county, you know, jail cell waiting for undocumented people to be arrested for anything to start highlighting those stories, to start amplifying the crime problem. And that, now, go ahead.
On our side of the aisle.
Yeah.
I'm seeing already, to make your point, because Mike's not out running every little congressional race in America anymore, so this is information for him, is that we're already seeing Mike, and it's not the New York special. The New York special was the New York, and what we're talking about there is the Santos special, and there was a lot of immigration stuff, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And the Democrat there was like, it's broken, we should fix it. He really leaned into that. This is not my point.
Right.
My point is, and this makes Mike Madrid's point, in every congressional race in America, especially as we lead up to the Super Tuesday primaries in California, all the ads being run by Republicans anywhere on TV are highlighting the broken border, people coming in, crime, unsafe neighborhoods. And it's just like we saw a lot of it last year, but I've never seen, they're leading with it now. And now what we are seeing on our side of the aisle is that we assumed that they can't talk about gas and groceries anymore because those prices are coming down. The stock market is at an all-time high. Things are going well, even though lots of middle-class Americans aren't feeling it. The numbers don't lie, so they can't tie the economy as much around Biden, and they'll continue to say, yeah, this economy's not good. But this crime thing, I didn't think about it being in the way you're talking about it as being able to make up for the Dobbs, which totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I've thought of it more of that they can't say that gas is $5 a gallon and bread is $3 a loaf or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, look, this race is going to come down to whether women, these white suburban college educated women that Republicans have been losing since the 2016 election,
right,
are more worried about abortion rights and their reproductive rights, or are they more scared of brown rapists streaming across the border? That's the race. That's the race. And here's where my frustration is with the Democrats. Is they don't understand the emotional pull of this because they've never run offense on this before. They are so convinced, rightfully so, with a lot of good data to suggest that Dobbs is going to save them, that white women are going to come out for and vote the way they have been since the Dobbs decision, one midterm and a handful of special elections, by the way. And I'm not saying that it's not going to work. It is. I'm not saying that there isn't a very, very compelling argument for women voting on this issue. There absolutely is. But I'm going to state something unequivocal. I have never, ever in 30 years of doing campaigns seen an issue as emotionally resonant and powerful as that of illegal immigration. And it's women that they're talking to. This is the bulwark to scare the living shit out of them. And if you don't think it's working, look at the numbers. It's increased 8% just since January. The concerns, it's now the top issue for a wide swath of Americans. And the number to be looking at is whether or not it's women that believe immigration is the top issue or the Dobbs decision is the top issue. And more than that, Republican women. Where are Republican women at on this? Because if we're just talking about him losing this base vote, if he mitigates that loss and shaves off a handful of African Americans and a handful of more Latinos, then things start looking pretty good for Donald Joseph Trump.
I think it's important that folks also know that when me and Mike say that there are rapists coming across, this is the way that the Republicans are creating the narrative. Obviously, me and Mike Madrid don't think that every Latino immigrant that's struggling to get to this country, we would never say that. But we talk because on this podcast, like me and Mike talk to each other and assume all of you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's why I clean that up there.
Thanks for that caveat.
No. Right.
Yeah.
But because that's literally, Mike is not being crazy. That's what the images that you see on these 30-second commercials are. And Latinos, and when folks have said, Chuck, how do you, they say, oh, the guy that ran in New York 3 leaned in on immigration and that's why he won. You know, he talked about the system being broken, but there's a right way to do this. And he did do that, but it was not near the level that Mike's talking about. You go and talk to Gabe Vasquez, you go talk to Ruben Gallego, you go talk to these Latinos who are Latino, representing Latino states who have the border in their backyard. They're down at the border talking about, let's shut it down. Let's fix it. Let's streamline this process. But if Democrats just said we can be a nation of immigrants and a nation of laws and say we can do both at the same time, it would solve a lot. But they're even scared a lot of times to say that.
Exactly. And that's where, I was grinching about Arab Americans demanding everything. Latino advocacy groups need to back up their members. Ruben needs that backing. There's no better spokesperson for that than Ruben Gallegos, because everybody knows where his heart is at on this. They know where he's coming from on this. But you can't lose everything. And if he goes down there and says there's a humane way to do this and starts to articulate a policy, it is not going to work if you blame Donald Trump. It's not. You have to put the policy forward. And let me explain why this is really critical, okay? Because I'm not hearing this in any of the Democrats' messaging because they've been afraid to do it for 30 years. I understand why. I'm not being judgy here. I'm just saying I'm giving you free political advice. When the deal blew up on immigration, okay, the president of the United States had all the leverage, all the political leverage, and all the moral high ground in the world. At that moment, what he should have done was gone out. I would have even gone down to one of the border states. I'm not saying go to Eagle Pass, but I'm saying go down to Arizona and stand with Ruben Gallego, or stand in the Rio Grande Valley, or stand in San Diego, California, or somewhere, New Mexico, too, second congressional district, and say, here's my 3-point plan that I want passed now. Talk about the policy that's going to solve the problems. What do? They went out and blamed Donald Trump. Now, that may feel really good, and that may sound good on Twitter, but what it did was it elevated Donald Trump in the debate. And the problem is for Democrats that Donald Trump has the largest advantage on this issue than any other issue. 20 points, the American public believes Donald Trump is better on the border and border security than Joe Biden. Why would you elevate Donald Trump in this debate? Go and win the policy and force the hand of the House Republicans, put them on the defensive. Once you elevate Trump, it's just yet another spat between Biden and Trump on ground that Donald Trump is winning by 20 points on.
I think that there's a good, and I don't understand why this didn't happen, but when we're talking about the groups, talking about Congress, talking about laws, this thing that passed, this immigration bill that could have got out of the Senate that was negotiated by a conservative Republican senator from Oklahoma, for God's sakes. Langford is not some kind of raging liberal. He's not even a moderate conservative. He is a right-wing, very, very conservative senator from Oklahoma, and that's what you got to be if you want to be a senator in Oklahoma. But the things that they came up with, my left-wing friends who are in the immigration rights movements were not happy with it at all. They were beside themselves angry. And then people on the right were beside themselves calling it amnesty, and it was nowhere near that. And it was not something that even I liked as policy. But guess what? It was something that could pass. It was going to start actually doing some things to fix some things that have been broken. What people don't think about because they just like to blame and use it for political rhetoric. We've done it forever. Now the Republicans have done it to own your safety. Is ever since 9/11, and when we locked this country down after 9/11, we never came back and put our immigration system back in order. Right. It's just a fact, right, Mike?
Yes, sir. 100%.
And so if you were to say there's a bill that the House Republicans could have taken up that could have passed the Senate, not if you start explaining too much of that, people won't be there. But there's plenty of other folks other than Donald Trump. Let's not play on his battlefield, because we're just not going to win there. Play on the one that we know we can win on. And guess what? Remember what I just said, girls and boys? The stock market's at an all-time high. Gas, I put gas in my Jeep yesterday. It was $3 a gallon. Like, it ain't that much. Like, there's a lot of positive things we could be talking about, but now we're back over there again, playing on their field, yes, talking about things that they could have done. And that's exactly why they didn't pass that bill. They didn't want to give that up. That's all they have to run on. Right, Mike?
Yeah, not only that, yeah, yes, yes. I mean, I'm giving a standing ovation. For those of you not watching YouTube, I'm standing up applauding Chuck right now.
Whatever, he is not. He never applauded me.
But I will say this too. Donald Trump said, blame me. Blame me. You know what? And then Biden does. It's like he's asking to be, blame me. Let's fight this out. Let's see who people believe more. Don't give him that. Do not give him that, because he knows what he's doing. He has complete command of this issue, and he's going to win it 9 times out of 10. Let me try to help my Democratic friends out a little bit more on this.
Oh, this ought to be good.
This is like Republicans talking about abortion. People don't believe Republicans on abortion, because for 30 years, they've been driving a narrative that is not really about, you know, fixing the problem here. It's about something else. That's what happens when Democrats start talking about immigration. What changed here was the president actually had the opportunity to go seize the high ground and give the American people what they wanted, and could have delivered the Senate on it and forced the hands of the House. That's what was the Democrats don't know how to run offense in this environment. They're learning, and the Republicans don't know how to play defense. They're not learning. Okay, the Republicans they don't want to fix this, which is why the president has to tell the American people what he's going to do to fix the problem. Fix the problem, not the blame. You can blame them later. They're going to do it themselves, folks. I guarantee you, I know Republicans, they will overplay their hand, especially on immigration. You saw in the Arizona House, a bill was introduced to allow people to kill undocumented immigrants that they suspect of coming across their land. Are you kidding me?
Exactly.
They will overplay their hand. They can't help themselves. It's who they are. That's who they are.
It's so almost give
them rope. Give them rope to hang themselves. Don't help them out.
It's almost like we're recording this on a Wednesday. Our top-notch team will probably have this out by Friday. You never know. We have millions of people working on the back end. The production team is all laughing right now, and they're all back there figuring out. But this, you should know that we're talking on a Wednesday. Tomorrow, it's like they've been listening to Mike Madrid. Guess who's going to the border tomorrow? President Biden is going to the border tomorrow.
They're listening to the Latino Vote podcast.
There we go. And
they're listening to Mike Madrid. Where do I send my invoice? Do I send my invoice?
And let me say
this. I have been right from the beginning on this. And I knew I was told.
I hate when he's right.
You know what? I'm just letting my record speak for itself. I have
been right. But also, because
no good deed. Exactly what he should be doing. It's exactly what he should be doing.
Because no good deed also will shock Mike Madrid. I just dropped the Joe Biden is headed to the border, which he is. It's almost like I'm making this up, but Mike Madrid, guess who also just announced they're going to the border too?
Donald J. Trump.
The same day. Going. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You can't let him have it, because he knows.
He knows. And good for Biden. Good for Biden. Go at him. Go get him. Like, let's have the debate and say, stop this now. Give me a bill today and I'll sign it. And we stop the problem now. And let Trump say, no, we got to put more alligators in that moat. We got to put more machine guns on the border. We got to, light this thing on fire and have space lasers shooting, human beings. Let them. They will overplay their hand. And I think this is a very good moment for a lot. For Joe Biden, I think it could cement his reelection. And I also think it's going to, like we were saying, with the Arab American community and Latino groups, which I love too. I know they don't like me as much as I love them. I understand that.
But I gave you an award at one of their organizations. Some of them like you.
And I love
them. I've given you an award.
They have. And I honestly, to my core, I'm not disparaging them at all. I love them for fighting for gente, for fighting for raza, for doing the right thing. Cause I don't like this policy either. I hate it. But damn if I want Biden to win re-election, because if Donald Trump gets elected on this issue with a larger share of the Latino vote, what does that do?
It sets everybody back.
So with that, Chuck,
we're going to pivot. Watch this pivot, Mike. So now that we've calmed Mike down, he's taking Adderall. We're coming up on Super Tuesday. Now, it's kind of a little bit of a sleeper Super Tuesday, but there's some things that y'all should be watching that I'm going to put on your radar. And a lot of that is coming from California. In California, they have this jungle primary system where it's the top two vote getters go to the general election, no matter who the party is. And there's just a lot of things going on in California. It starts with this Senate election where you have these three Democrats running. But then you also have a former L.A. Dodgers pitcher who's running as a Republican, who folks know.
First baseman.
Oh, he was not a pitcher?
Steve Garvey.
Yeah, was not a pitcher?
No.
Steve Garvey, who I think may have taken some blows to the head, but is a Republican, is running, and he's getting a lot of support. And the big question out there is, will it be a D versus an R for the general, or will one of the other Democratic candidates, very qualified, Congresswoman Portman and Congresswoman Barbara Lee, full disclosure, I'm doing a little work, brought in for Barbara Lee here at the last little bit to bring her over. Some Chuck Roach's secret duper duper stuff with Latino voters is happening. Nice. Can't let y'all know, but she brought us in to, you know, Bernie Sanders did pretty well in California. We'll just leave it at that. But anything could happen in California with this Senate race. And so watch it, because if it's Garvey against another Democrat, then I think the Democrat, what's the Democrat's name who did the
Porter.
Impeachment?
Porter. Schiff.
Schiff is one. I never remember Schiff's name. So if he's running against the Republican in the general, Mike, it's much different if he's running against one of these women Democrats, right? For the general in California?
Yeah. Yeah. But remember, I mean, it's California. Steve Garvey's not going to win a U.S. Senate seat here.
But the difference, and I think you're making my point, but let me ask my question a different way.
Yeah.
I feel like Schiff is guaranteed to be the senator if he's running against Garvey. If he's running against Katie Portman or a black woman in the general, I think anything could happen.
Yes. Yes. Okay. That's correct. And that's why Adam Schiff is trying desperately to elevate Steve Garvey in the primary. And that's politics.
He's even running ads, right?
He's running ads.
His super PAC is running ads going, this Garvey guy, he is just like Donald Trump, and not that he's a good Republican.
Yeah, and Republicans are seeing those ads that he's running, and he's consolidating the Republican vote behind him. That works, by the way. I will tell you that as somebody who ran Antonio Villaraigosa's campaign, Gavin Newsom did the same thing to us in that primary, because we would have, I think, beaten Gavin Newsom. At least we would have given a hell of a run for his money.
Yeah,
in the general. He knocked us out by elevating the Republican, John Cox, who was endorsed by Donald Trump, and there was no lane for us anymore. So this is a tried and true measure. Republicans are basically pawns of Democrats at this point. They're like these little, you know, schoolyard mice that, you know, the cats play with to kind of influence the outcomes of their races more than have any meaningful involvement. But look, I'm excited now that I'm hearing what you're doing. And if Bernie Sanders gets involved, we better have him here on the podcast, because I want to interview you and Bernie on the podcast if it gets down to that. But what else are you looking at on Super Tuesday?
I was just writing a few notes down, because so much is going to change in California after Super Tuesdays. First, there's these multi-candidate primaries where you don't know which Democrat is going to make the ballot to run against the Republican in very Latino-heavy areas. Not super, but big areas. First is the old race that me and Mike like to spend all of our time talking about when it's not the Texas Valley, which is our buddy in California 22, the Portuguese
Valadao.
Valadao. Mm-hmm. So Valadao is running again. And there's like another Republican who's trying to outflank him to the right. There's our good buddy, State Senator Rudy Salas, who ran last time, who's came back. There's another Democratic woman or man out there named Fuertes.
Maria Hurtado.
Hurtado. Yeah, I got to thank God you're here. And anyway, anything, literally, like all of those people are all in like in the mid-20s in public polling. And there's no telling. You got the Democrats running ads. You got Republicans running ads. The crazy guy running against Valadao is running these Lee Greenwood ads with just these American flags and Donald Trump in the background. I'm proud to be an American. And he's just standing there with his hands on his hips, looking up at the flag. Where at least I know I'm free. Oh, my God. It is the funniest shit in the world.
He has a great voice, by the way.
Anything could happen in California 22. And then the other one I'll mention and then ask you about both of these is...
By the way, real quick on California 22, you could see the Democrats box themselves out of the primary or the Republicans box themselves out of the primary.
Could happen so easy.
In one of the most contested seats in the country, there's a possibility that either party could split their own vote and not be in the runoff.
And what Mike is saying for all of you Texans and New Jerseyans out there is that it could be two Democrats or two Republicans, and there's no really race. Now, what does that mean for this area? Let me tell it to a Chuck Rocher wind up, which is the district is 70% plus Latino.
Mm-hmm.
There was more Spanish language advertising spent in this one CD than any CD in America last year. So all that money goes away. And these people stop getting talked to. And it's the lowest turnout of a Latino population in America that underperforms its census numbers of anywhere. Poor farm workers, Kern County, Valadao, dairy farms. Like, it is something else. And it would be a shame if we didn't have opposing parties there.
Well, we'll see. Let's see if you can deliver that.
The next one is California 45. This is the Republican Michelle Steele. She is Asian American in Orange County, right, Mike?
Yeah, she is. And this is the most Democratic seat held by a Republican in Orange County.
But it became less Democratic after redistricting, didn't it? It's still like D plus one or two.
I think it's D plus like four or five, maybe okay. Six.
You're probably right.
Let me say this. And Michelle Steele is married to Sean Steele, who's the RNC committee man from California. I've known him for 27 years. And Sean's a character, but he's one hell of a good operator and tactician. They've put together the most ambitious multicultural ground operation of any Republican campaign I've ever seen in the country. So they know how to fight for this. And Michelle's done a pretty good job of holding on to a seat with a very conservative voting record. It's going to depend on what turnout looks like in this year. But Orange County, and I'm going to have an announcement in coming episodes, probably next Wednesday. I'll make an announcement on some stuff I'll be doing in Orange County at UC Irvine coming up. Orange County is really one of the most politically competitive regions in the entire country. And it's the place to watch to give you a sense of who's going to be in control of the White House, the House of Representatives, and I would argue to a certain extent, less extent, even the U.S. Senate, because it's got all the demographics that are shifting and moving and changing, and it's a great petri dish to look at. But Michelle Steele will probably be in the top three or four seats that could be knocked off and taken by a Democrat.
What you need to know for all of you back home is that this district is one of the few districts that is 30% white, 30% Latino, and 30% Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And the Asian population is really unique here because it is, and I think, Mike, it's Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a little more conservative
a lot than others. More.
Yeah.
They're like Cubans. They're like the Cubans of the Latinos. They're the Republicans because of anti-communist sentiment.
So Michelle Steele is running against four Democrats. One is a Cheyenne Hunt, very white name. Then you have this guy, Derek Tran, who a lot of the Democrats are with. He's an Army veteran, got in the race late because folks had lost. They didn't think that the woman that had gotten in originally, who was going to be, and I'm going to tell you her name in a second, who was going to be the one that was could perfectly bridge this gap, because her name was Kim Nguyen. Anybody knows Vietnamese? Nguyen is like N-G-U-Y. So it's Nguyen hyphenated Penalosa. So she's half Vietnamese and half Mexican.
That's very California.
Yeah. And so I've been running some IE work for Kim, but not for her, but for her race, be very clear, trying to get her into the final two, because I think she, with her last name, she hasn't raised, quote unquote, as much money as the power brokers want her to. So they recruited this army guy to get in, and he may win too. Whoever wins, it's going to be a free for all. And Orange County, I'll also remind you that, and this dovetails into the last comment I have on the redistricting. This used to be Gil Cisneros' seat for one term. Our good brother, who won the national lottery one time, who was working at Frito-Lay, who won like $500 million and then ran for Congress, then got beat by Ms. Steele. And so he was out of Congress for a year. And so this was his seat. But you should know that he's moved just up the street. And that my last point was, there's a lot of Latino icons that are retiring, where there's going to be a new group of leadership in California. It's already started with somebody like Robert Garcia, with Ninette Barragan came in as a 30-year-old. Now you have Grace Napolitano retiring, and you have Gil Cisneros running in Grace Napolitano's seat, along with a bunch of state senators and state reps from that area. It's a lot of East LA, I think, right, Mike?
Yeah.
Down to Orange County?
Yeah. I love that you're talking about this emergence of a new generation of Latino leaders, because you're 110% right. And it's going to be very different than what we've seen in the past. And the reason why I'm excited to bring it up is because Gustavo Arellano from the LA Times, columnist of the LA Times, has written a remarkable four-part series on the history of the Latino vote in California that is just, we'll put it in the links below of this session, if that's okay. Andreas, our production team, will put it in the link below, because
we have 15 production assistants, but good. Go ahead.
Yeah. You guys got to read this series. It's so insightful, and it's particularly insightful because this story that really begins in the 1980s is the story that is beginning in 90% of the country right now. And you're going to see how this plays out.
Oh, I'd love to read this.
Oh, you will love it, Chuck. It'll give you a really good deep insight from a lot of the people that you're going to know, all of these players, but how they came to find the position that they did with each other, their own personal dynamics, friendships from, you know, their childhood days that became enemies later on. And it's really the story of the emergence of the Latino voting bloc to its maturity. And I think you'll find it fascinating.
The last district, I think, dovetails into what you're just saying, and it may be in this book as far as I know, but the last district that's really changing is in the San Fernando Valley, which is our old friend and podcast alum, Congressman Cardenas, is retiring. And there's a young Latina named Luz Rivas. Mm-hmm. She a state rep, Mike, assembly member?
She is.
So she's running. What is she, maybe 35? She's in her 30s.
Very young. Yeah. And she's from that San Fernando Valley machine. Tony Cardenas and Alex Padilla, young friends before they got elected. They were young operatives. This is the second part of the story, because San Fernando Valley Democrats, Latinos, are very different than the East LA Democrats like Antonio Villaraigosa. All of them friends of Chuck's and ours and friends of the show. We'll have some of them on later this year. But this new emergence is kind of the end of that machine era, the end of the Padilla Cardenas machine, which was as storied and historic as the Waxman Berman machine. With Tony stepping out, a new generation of leadership is stepping in. It's really fascinating.
It was super interesting to see Luz do her announcement. Guess who was standing on each one of her sides? One was Tony Cardenas on her right, Alex Padilla on her left. So that was to exactly what Mike Madrid is saying, is they needed the old machine and those old Democratic voters to know Luz was their handpicked successor, because there was a Latina there in that race that's run against Tony the last three or four elections and made it to the final two and got like 60,000 votes. You know, it's not a given. And so they wanted to make sure that everybody knew these old machine politics is still alive and well as much as it can be in this day and age. It's just really different now. It's not like it was back then, but Tony and I give them credit, side by side with Luz. Lots of changes. Super Tuesday will be interesting to see. Mike, what do you want to take us out with?
Well, let's just wrap up with that. I mean, the next time we do talk is going to be after Super Tuesday. Obviously, there'll be a lot of California stories to talk about. But that's not all. There's going to be a lot all over the country. And for the first time, I think we will have a Super Tuesday where the Latino vote is going to be important in a number of states, if not all of them, because it's discernible now. So Chuck and I will be here with you to give you the ups and downs, the ins and outs, the here's, the there's on the Latino vote. Everywhere it's going to impact Super Tuesday. I think we've got a couple of really, really great guests. I don't want to announce them now, but I think we'll probably just be you and I again doing some analysis because we've got some looking under the hood to do after Super Tuesday for our next recording. But until then, Chuck, have a good one.
I don't know. You shouldn't really wrap it up all the way because we both came on here so hot, and I'm trying to think of a good way for us to be nice and calm when we go out. And I think me and Mike knew we needed some space to just vent. We have been having these great guests, and we have great guests. They have such great stories. Me and Mike don't want to interrupt them, so we just let them talk because they should. Me and Mike were like, maybe we should have a few episodes where me and you can just go off and start talking like we used to talk. And so what we're going to see going forward is we're going to have some great guests, and there's going to be a few weeks when we don't have a guest. And so we think that's probably the best because a lot of you have let us know that you want to hear our analysis. You want to see behind the curtain, under the hood. And so I think this will be a format that I like, Mike likes, and that we're going to move forward. But the most important thing is like the podcast, share the podcast, tell your friends about the podcast. Make sure that you tell everybody you know that they should be listening to the Latino Vote podcast. Wherever we go, wherever we're out at, people are always like, we love the podcast and we love hearing your reviews. Give us your reviews. Let us know what you think. Let us know who we should be having on the phone. And until next week, we'll see you soon.